On our side, the fire had done no more than scorch the nearer trees. It had failed to secure its footing. In one place, the woodman had been at work on Saturday. Trees, felled and freshly trimmed, lay in a clearing, with heaps of sawdust by the sawing machine and its engine. Hard by was a temporary hut deserted. There was not a breath of wind this morning, and everything was strangely still. Even the birds were hushed. And as we hurried along, I and the artilleryman talked in whispers and looked now and again over our shoulders. Once or twice we stopped to listen. After a time, we drew near the road, and as we did so, we heard the clatter of hoofs and saw through the tree stems three cavalry soldiers riding slowly toward Woking. We hailed them, and they halted while we hurried toward them. It was a lieutenant and a couple of privates of the 8th Hussars, with a stand like a theodolite, which the artilleryman told me was a heliograph.
"You are the first men I've seen coming this way this morning," said the lieutenant. "What's brewing?"
His voice and face were eager. The men behind him stared curiously. The artilleryman jumped down the bank into the road and saluted.
"Gun destroyed last night, sir. Have been hiding. Trying to rejoin battery, sir. You'll come inside of the Martians, I expect, about half a mile along this road."
"What the dickens are they like?" asked the lieutenant.
"Giants in armor, sir. 100 feet high. 3 legs and a body like aluminium, with a mighty great head in a hood, sir."
"Get out," said the lieutenant. "What confounded nonsense?"
"You'll see, sir. They carry a kind of box, sir, that shoots fire and strikes you dead."
"What do you mean? A gun?"
"No, sir."
And the artilleryman began a vivid account of the heat ray. Halfway through, the lieutenant interrupted him and looked up at me. I was still standing on the bank by the side of the road.
"It's perfectly true," I said.
"Well," said the lieutenant, "I suppose it's my business to see it too. Look here," to the artilleryman. "We're detailed here clearing people out of their houses. You'd better go along and report yourself to Brigadier General Marvin and tell him all you know. He's at Weybridge. Know the way?"
"I do," I said, and he turned his horse southward again.
"Half a mile, you say?" said he.
"At most," I answered, and pointed over the treetops southward.
He thanked me and rode on, and we saw them no more. Farther along, we came upon a group of 3 women and 2 children in the road, busy clearing out a labourer's cottage. They had got hold of a little hand truck and were piling it up with unclean-looking bundles and shabby furniture. They were all too assiduously engaged to talk to us as we passed. By Byfleet Station we emerged from the pine trees and found the country calm and peaceful under the morning sunlight. We were far beyond the range of the heat ray there, and had it not been for the silent desertion of some of the houses, the stirring movement of packing in others, and the knot of soldiers standing on the bridge over the railway and staring down the line toward Woking, the day would have seemed very like any other Sunday.